ജയം ശ്രീപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ് ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്രീല പ്രവിഷ്ട ഓം ശ്രീപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുന്ദ രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഇംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലിഡ് ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലിഡ് ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബ്ലിഡ് ബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓഫ് ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗുരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമോഷ്ഠായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നാമേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്തിയർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർത്ഥവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യദ പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യദോന്വയാദിതരദ ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ വേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ നാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധിമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം മാപരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിവി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീതൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുകമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാം യം പ്രവ്രജന്തമനുഭേദം അഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമജുഹാവ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിം ആനതോസ്മൈ യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതിതീർഷതം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുകുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോഃ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാ മുരാരേ മധുരിന്ന കനികാഭികാഭികാവി നമാ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻ ഹരി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഗം കൗമോദഗീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വീണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. Last month from Ekadasha Skandam in Srimad Bhagavatam, where the nine yogis Kavi Hari, Andariksha, Prabuddha Pipalayanan, Agarhotra, Drumila, Chamasa and Karabhajana, they arrived in Nimi Maharaj's palace, where Nimi Maharaj inquired from them. Nine questions were asked and the nine yogis answered them individually. Every question was answered by one yogi, one of the yogeshwaras out of the nine. Nine questions were raised by Nimi Maharaj and each one of the yogis answered one question. So, generally, as you know, Ekadasha Skandam is a lot different from all other skandams, which we'll see why it is so different than all the others. Because in Ekadasha Skandam, the topic of discussion is mukti. Mukti means liberation, you can say in English, but mukti is anyadha rupam surubena vyavasthiti. That means when one gets situated in his constitutional position, what he is actually. At the moment, we don't know what we are. We are just calling ourselves some different names, whatever has been given to us by our parents. And based on the body, we identify with all different objects in this world. And that is our life today. It has no other meaning than that. Basically, we have got some body somewhere, and on that body, somebody has put a name on top of it. And we all relate each other through this body and the name. Bhagavatam is saying it has nothing to do with your spiritual identity. Actually, as spirit souls, we have a completely different identity, which we do not know at the moment. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, Muktihi tanyadha rupam surubena vyavasthiti. When suruba vyavasthiti, when one is situated in one's own true identity, then he is in mukti, he is liberated. Otherwise, he is not liberated, he is conditioned. And so therefore, it is an enormous task to come to that platform of mukti. It is not so simple, as Srimad Bhagavatam will explain that in detail, how that process works, with through process of knowledge or through the process of devotion. Generally, we will say that according to Dharma Shastram, that means particularly Manu Samhita and others, dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham, four things, isn't it? Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. These are the four things in which a human life has to normally go through. Isn't it? Dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. This is how it's translated. So these four stages exist. Four states through which one is supposed to build his life in this world. Why these four? Why is it spoken like that? Because normally, What do we deal with normally? There is an external world with which we relate with this world, isn't it? There's an external world. We come to this world and we relate with this, the world outside. Then we have got our body, then we have got our mind, and then we have got the soul, the jiva, the living entity. So these four things, the world, the body, the mind and the soul, jiva, these four things are in our, this is what we are generally experiencing in this life, isn't it? The jiva, the living entity, has got its mind and body, and then it has to deal with the world outside. So, out of these, if you relate them with this dharmam, artham and kamam and moksham, you will see that dharmam or religious principles are meant to execute, to maintain an order in this world. That is the connection. So the world and dharmam are related to each other. The world and the dharmam are related to each other. For example, in order that the world can go on smoothly, a certain dharmam is necessary. Certain principles are necessary. The principles are like, for example, I should not give pain to somebody else and make others' life difficult, nor he should create a situation for me to carry on in this world. So that mutually a trust and respect to each other, to every living entity, that is what is expected basically from dharmam. Dharmam is meant for that. So that the transactions of this world goes on smoothly without causing any disturbances to anyone. So therefore, all this dharma shastram has been created. How varnashrama dharmam was created. Everything was created for this purpose. So that the world order, the world stays in a peaceful condition. Therefore, that reason. And then, second thing is artham. Artham means, generally we refer to as wealth. But in the olden days when there was no cash available, it was always barter. So anything can be referred to as artham. But artham is for what? Artham is only for one purpose, for sustaining this body, material body. So artham and shariram, or this material body, they are related to each other. For maintaining this material body, you require money in this world. Nobody can say that we'll maintain, because ordinary people who come to this world, they have their bodily needs, bodily necessities, in other words. When we get sick, we need medicine. When we get hungry, we need food. When you are tired, you need to sleep in a place. So, all these requirements, that is all related to the body. Nothing else, except related to the body. So, in order to fulfill the needs of the body, there is what is called as artham. Artham. And artham, in different senses, it can be understood. Because when Sita Devi was to be married in Mithila, Sita Devi's father, Janaka Maharaj, put a condition that the cash required for marrying Sita Devi is to break this bow, which was Lord Shiva's bow, which was kept there. That has to be broken. So that was the cash required. He said the dhanusa has to be broken. So, broad sense, you can say, artham means basically for all that is required for maintenance of this body. Then, what is the next one? The mind, isn't it? The mind and kamam, they are related to each other. How? When we come to this world, we don't bring only this external material body. Along with that, our mind comes. And what does mind mean? So many vasanas that has been built up in previous lifetimes. So many desires that has come along with it. Nobody can do anything about it. It comes with us. When we come to this world, from previous lifetime, so many different vasanas, so many different propensities, desires, or so much what we have created, that will all follow us in this life as well. And that's the reason what gives us the impetus to go and achieve it or acquire it in this world. So, kamam is the activity of the mind. The mind requires these desires to be fulfilled because they are influencing us from inside through the mind. These desires are influencing us through the mind. So the mind requires the fulfillment of these desires, and so that these desires are satisfied to some degree, so that it doesn't disturb us too much. This is the way it is spoken like that. That we all have desires, and nobody can fulfill all the desires all the time. That's also not possible. So in order to control this mind, some of the desires are satisfied to some degree, and remaining things by controlling the mind, so that the mind stays peaceful in this world. That is the goal behind it. And ultimately, finally, what is known as moksham. Moksham is liberation. Liberation is for what? For the soul. Liberation is for the soul. സോ ധർമ്മം അർത്ഥം കാമം മോക്ഷം ഫോർ തിങ്സ് ആൻഡ് ഇൻ റിലേഷൻഷിപ്പ് വിത്ത് ദി ധർമ്മം ഈസ് ഫോർ ദ വേൾഡ് അർത്ഥം ഈസ് ഫോർ ദ ബോഡി കാമം ഈസ് ഫോർ ദ മൈൻഡ് ആൻഡ് ലിബറേഷൻ ഈസ് ഫോർ ദി സോൾ liberation is for the soul. So that is why these four things are important. Religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. They are given importance for this reason because they are related with these four things. Material body has to fulfill its desires, artham is required. The mind has got so many vasanas inside, kamam to be fulfilled. And similarly, to deal, to maintain an order, peaceful situation in this world, we have what is called the material world, we have what is called the dharma or the religious principles. So if you look into, but the last thing which is called moksha or liberation is the goal of everything. Ultimately the goal is the liberation, not any of dharma, artham and kamam. Moksha is the goal. It is something like this, that you have got a first class road, a motorway, a wonderful car, and you also got the petrol fully full tank filled in. But if there is no passenger in the car, what is the use of all the other three? So moksham or liberation is the last thing for which, in order to get to that point, all other things are controlled through this dharmam, artham and kamam. Dharmam, artham and kamam controls all these things. That is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, you will find in the beginning Sudha Goswami was asked by a question, was there by Shaunak Rishi. What was he saying? Kamasya indriya prayir labho jiveda yavada jivasya tattva jnyasa nartho ascheha karmabhi. He says there that kamasya indriya prayir, that dharmam, artham and kamam is not the goal of life. It is kamam, and actually the sages in Naimisharanyam started doubting this whole thing. They were saying that what is the point in doing all these things? What is the goal ultimately? This was their question. Kamasya indriya prethir lato labho jiveta yavada. This indriya prethi, what is the profit? They were asking. We have been doing this for so many lifetimes. In this lifetime also we are doing this. But is this the goal? Finally, this question came up there. Jivasya tattva jityasa. Tattva jityasa is the goal of jiva. For the living entity, tattva jityasa means finding out the process by which one can escape from this kamam, artham and dhammam and come to the platform of mukti or liberation. You see? Jivasya tattva jijnyasa na artho yas cheha karmabhi. Artham, kamam and all is not the goal. Artham and kamam and all is only in reference to body and the mind. Apart from that, once that stage is over, then one has to only think about this final goal, which is when released from this body, one can go back home, back to Krishna. So that is why the ultimate goal of life is not dharmam, artham and kamam. It is moksham. So, but these are tools. It is set up in such a way that one goes through this and eventually becomes qualified for liberation and realize the importance of liberation and work for that. So in order to make people to work for that, one has been given these slight concessions by by the sages. Because dharma, artham and kamam did not satisfy Shaunaka Rishi and all the other sages who were present there. That's why they asked this question. What they were saying, that kamasi indriya preeti labho jiveda yavada. Indriya preeti, what is the profit? They were asking. Jivasya tattva jityasa. Jiva has only one goal, tattva jityasa. So jityasa means to work towards liberation. Na artho yascheha karmavi. Artham and kamam is not the goal of life. They made it very clear in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam itself. This one point. This one point, they made it very clear. So you will see there, when you go in that way, that when, if you go back, now coming back to Ekadasi Skandam, that when Uddhava met Vidura, if you remember in the third canto we discussed this, Vidura went on a pilgrimage after leaving Hastinapur. When the war was decided, Mahabharata war was decided, Vidura decided to leave the palace. He walked out from there, had left the bow and arrow there and said, I'm going on a pilgrimage. He went on a very long pilgrimage. After that, many years he passed, wandered around and eventually decided to come back and see Krishna. By now Mahabharata war was over, And almost Krishna has also left this world, back to the spiritual world, Krishna's abode. And in that process, on his way back, he arrived in Vrindavan, and one evening, Vrindavan, it was just twilight, Vidura went to bathe in the Yamuna river. At that time, one personality arrived there with a huge bundle on his head. He came there in a hurry, left the bundle there, went and bathed, came back and dressed. Dressed himself and was sitting there chanting the holy names. Hearing the sound of the sound vibration, immediately Vidura recognized it was Uddhava. So Vidura, out of his, he had a long-lasting relationship with Uddhava for a very long time. But now it was broken for many years, for quite some time during his due to his pilgrimage. So when he heard the sound of Uddhava, he immediately recognized and asked Uddhava, "Is that not Uddhava?" Uddhava also, when he heard the sound of Vidura, immediately recognized each other. The light wasn't good enough that they could see very well each other, but still through the sound they heard this. They recognized each other. And they had a discussion there. They had a discussion there. At that point, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, you will find some statement from Vidura which is particularly fascinating. What did Vidura say about Uddhava? Vidura says about Uddhava, Purnartho likshidastena sneha prasarasam plodaha. This is how he describes Uddhava at that time. Purnartho likshidastena sneha prasarasam plodaha. Vidura is saying, in front of me, a personality was standing and he was calling that personality not as Uddhava. As far as Vidura is concerned, Uddhava is over, finished, gone. Purnartho lakshidasena sneha prasarasam pludaha. That here in front of me is standing Purna Artham. Purna Artham means the essence of everything. The essence of everything. Or in other words, you can say the deep import or deep meaning of the whole Vedic conclusions is standing in front of me. This is how he mentioned about Uddhava. This is how he mentioned about Uddhava. Because when Vidura looked at Uddhava, Vidura did not see his old friend Uddhava there. What he saw there was this Purnartho lakshidastena sneha prasara sampludaha. That sneha prasara sampludaha, a personality standing there, totally different from Uddhava. He was giving an impression to Uddhava, to Vidura, that I am standing here, and Vidura felt that Uddhava, instead of Uddhava, it was actually the whole essence of Vedic literature. Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Yadapashyandi Surya. That the whole essence of Vedic literature is standing there. This is how Vidura felt about this. Why did he say like that? Because that is how, when you see a self-realized personality, you have to remember, Uddhava was coming there after receiving the final instructions from Krishna, Ekadasha Skandam. So this Ekadasha Skandam has changed this personality, Uddhava, to that degree that Vidura could not see anymore Uddhava there. He was seeing there Purnartham. Purnartham means the complete essence of everything. What has been concluded by the Vedas, Vedic literature, is standing in front of me in a personal form. This is how we saw him. Purnartho lakshidastena sneha prasara sampludam. Sneha prasara sampluda. That the looking at Uddhava, Vidura could not believe this, that this was such a transformation has happened in Uddhava. So this is why it is said like that the Ekadasha Skandam, if it is totally understood, properly understood and realized, then this is the change that will happen to your personality. This is to prove that point. Sri Shukan says this in the beginning of third canto itself. That is where Ekadasha is referred first time. And in order to give that example, generally there is the change that happens to a person. So normally there is a fruit, in Sanskrit it's called Kapitham. Kapitham is the name of that fruit. It is slightly smaller than the coconut, but almost like a cricket ball size, you can say. Kapitha Jambu Bhalasara Bhakshidam. The elephants, they eat this fruit. They eat this fruit. When they eat the fruit and it comes out from in their expression, it will stay as it is. Nothing has changed. Outside when you look at it, nothing has changed. It looks exactly the way it has eaten. But if you break the fruit and look at it, all the inside part is gone. Elephant has eaten that. How it happens and all, you can't ask me, I can't answer that question. But it happens. When the elephant eats this fruit, it's called kapitham. In Sanskrit it's called kapitham. I don't know what the English word is. Kapitha jambu bhalasara bhakshidam. In so many places this fruit grows. When elephants eat them, it goes in and it comes out exactly as it is. Appearance is exactly the same, the way it has gone in, it comes out. But what has happened? The inside thing, inside the fruit, what was in there, that's all gone. That's the elephant has taken. So similarly, the comparison here is, Uddhava was standing there, but if you look at Uddhava, externally it looks the same, but inside all the ahankaram, false ego, has completely gone. All the vasanas, karma vasanas, everything that was there, that is also gone. Only the external shell is there. This is what Vidura has seen. Vidura could see that this is what was left with. So that is why he said here, Purnartho lakshidastena sneha prasarasam pludam. That Purnartho lakshidastena sneha prasarasam pludam. So why all this is spoken is that Uddhava was in Dwaraka with so many other personalities there, isn't it? If you look in the Bhagavatam, you will see what a huge population was there in Dwaraka at that time. And that too, they were not ordinary people. Most of them have come from the heavenly planets and other planets. And they were very, very powerful people. But what has happened is here, that the Krishna gave this message of Ekadasham only to Uddhava. Nobody else. No one else got it. Nobody else got it. Only Uddhava got it. So, why is it like that? That only Uddhava got it? Basically because the receiving that spiritual instructions from a great soul is not always easy. Is not always easy. You can see here, even Krishna was there giving the giving Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna gave it to Uddhava. But none of the other Yadavas who were present there could receive it. None of the other Yadavas present there could receive it. So Vidura, Uddhava says to Vidura that all those Yadavas who were present there, he says there, all those Yadavas who were present there, he says, Durbhagam Badalogoyam Yadavo Nidaramabi Yesamasando Navidur Harimina Ivodubam. He says to Uddhava, says to Vidura, I got it, they didn't get it. He said, they didn't get it. Harimina Ivodubam, what is that? They got, they didn't get it, and Uddhava has got it, Ekadasha Skandam. That's what he was referring to. And he said, the Yadavas, they did one mistake. What was that mistake? Can you close that door, please? Durbhaga badalogoyam harimi durbhagam badalogoyam yadavo nidaramabi ye sammasando navidur harimina ivodubam harimina ivodubam. That means that Uddhava is saying that the situation was like this. When the moon is reflected in the water, all the fish in the water was thinking that the moon, the reflection of the moon is also another fish like us. And similarly, all the Yadavas also thought Krishna is also somebody like us, among us. That is how they thought about Krishna. None of them, that is Krishna's, that is the power of Maya. That nobody could understand who Krishna was. But Uddhava understood. And Uddhava says there, all the Yadavas affected the senses of Krishna. They were carried away by the opulences of Krishna. What they wanted actually was Krishna's opulences. They didn't want Krishna. They wanted Krishna's opulences. I wanted Krishna. I got Krishna because I wanted Krishna. I didn't want the opulences. But the other ones wanted the opulences and they got the opulences. This is how Uddhava says about that situation in Dwaraka to Uddhava. All the Yadavas got affected by Krishna's opulences and they enjoyed that, but they left Krishna. This is what happens. They in Krishna consciousness also this can happen. We will come, we will see the opulences of Krishna, but we will miss Krishna. We will get the opulences, but we won't get Krishna. So Uddhava is teaching us there. This is Srimad Bhagavatam means this, that Bhagavatam is giving us this message to understand what is Krishna, how to get Krishna, not the opulences. The opulences is another aspect of Krishna. It is one of his Bhagavani is called because of opulences. But opulences is not the goal. All the Aishwaryam, all the opulences, that is what the Yadavas wanted and they got it. They didn't get Krishna. But Uddhava, who was more intelligent, if you remember, Vrishninam Pravaryo Mandri, Krishnasya Daita Sakha, Shishyo Brihaspade Sakshal, Uddhava Buddhisattamaha. Buddhisattama is intelligent. He knew what he wanted. He wanted Krishna. So he looked for Krishna and he got Krishna. Krishna gave him what he has to get. That was Ekadasha Skanda. So this is the reason why it is said like this, that they didn't get it, they got what they wanted. Why? They were captivated or they were affected by the opulences of Dwaraka. They thought everything is so wonderful, such an opulent lifestyle. Don't have to work very hard, everything is coming very well and having a comfortable life. So they were affected by that, nothing else. The mind didn't go before than that, where this was all coming from. And they didn't look for Krishna. Then, so you can see there that how easily we get distracted in spiritual life. We get distracted in spiritual life. This is also pointing out another important thing, that even after getting Krishna as an associate, as the supreme spiritual master, isn't it? Krishna Mande Jagalgurum is the supreme spiritual master. Even after receiving excellent spiritual master or the best spiritual master you can think of, still the associates could not take any benefit from that. They couldn't get any benefit out of it. What is it also showing? It's also showing that a disciple or an aspirant in spiritual life, unless he is ready for it, to receive that spiritual knowledge, for which a certain preparations are necessary prior to come to that point, and unless he has gone through that, and unless he is ready for it, he's not going to get it. Because generally people go around looking for Guru, isn't it? They're looking for Guru. Actually, it is not the right way. The Guru is coming to the disciple according to Krishna's arrangement. After all, the spiritual master is nobody else than Krishna. He, in the form, in the dress of spiritual master, Krishna comes to the personality who is looking for Krishna. So, therefore it is said, even if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, how do you find, when did Parikshit Maharaj inquire about Krishna? What stage did he inquire? When he realized that in 7 days' time, he was going to go, he was going to leave this world, and he has to leave his body, at that point, the proper desire came to him to hear about Krishna. That was the time. That is why in the Bhagavatam you will see, Sudeva Goswami come to see Parikshit at the appropriate time, when Parikshit is ready for that. Otherwise, Sudeva Goswami could have come and seen Parikshit before also. He never came. Why did he not come? Because Parikshit was not ready for that. Parikshit, when he got, Maharaj Parikshit, when he got the curse from the Brahmana boy that in 7 days' time he has to leave this body, and when he realized that I have no other business in this life now except to prepare for the death, and he got completely prepared for that, leaving this world, at that time Sudeva Goswami arrives on the scene. That is how Vedavyas brings Sudeva Goswami at the end of the first canto, isn't it? At the end of the first canto. From second canto onwards, Sudeva Goswami's discussion, Sudeva Goswami's instructions begin from there. Sridhar Goswami's instructions begin from then on. But whole of this first canto is just to tell us how Parishad got ready to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and to receive the instructions from Sridhar Goswami. Otherwise, the whole first canto need not have spoken. There are so many things in the first canto which are related to Vyasanarada Samvadam or Vedavyasa Maharshi and Sridhana Maharshi's discussions, how Srimad Bhagavatam was written. And also you will see there the discussions between Ashwatthama's discussion and Mahabharata war and the aftermath of the Mahabharata war, what happened, all these things which has no relevance to much to Srimad Bhagavatam. But why was it all spoken? It was only spoken to bring to this point how Parikshit got ready to receive Srimad Bhagavatam. Just to tell us that one point, all that first canto was spoken. Because when Parikshit was ready, automatically Krishna sends the right person to talk to him about the process of leaving the body. But one has to come to that platform. That is why, as one who is trying to advance in spiritual life, one has to come to certain realizations in life that the process is that one does not see that, oh, spiritual, so many spiritual masters, list is given, it's advertised in the newspaper, I pick one out of that. This is not the process. This is not the process. This is all foolishness, because it doesn't work like that. Spiritual master comes to a disciple when he is crying for Krishna. That's the point when spiritual master comes to a person. This is an important point, because Srimad Bhagavatam is only, if you understand from the surface, everything will be misunderstood. But if you think through it, why it has been spoken, why Vedavyasa Maharshi brought it in this way, that Parikshit had to go through all this before he came to this point of inquiring about Krishna. And that came seriously. That seriousness, what he got, was only when he was told that he has to leave the body in 7 days' time. Otherwise, Parikshit was still thinking about his administration, managing this planet, there's so many other businesses like a Kshatriya king has got. So all that finishes at that point. And then in the Bhagavatam you will see there, what is this Bhagavatam means? That is another question, isn't it? What is Bhagavatam means? Bhagavatam means that knowledge related with Krishna. How to know what is Krishna? That is Srimad Bhagavatam. Knowledge that is related to Krishna is Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam in the beginning you will find, Vadanti dat tattvavidam tattvayajnanam advayam bhramedi paramatmedi bhagavan iti shabdyate. Isn't it? So, Vadandi, Tattvavid Vadandi, all those people who know the truth, they say, Tattvam Yajnanam Advayam, this one without a second, this knowledge, is this truth, absolute truth. There, it is mentioned, Vadandi Tattvavidam Tattvam Yajnanam Advayam, it is spoken, Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavan Iti Shabdade, Brahmam Paramatma Bhagavan, the same vastu, the same object is spoken in three different ways. Who call the Upanishads? Upanishads refer to it as Brahman. Upanishads refers to it as Brahman. The yogis, Ashtanga yogis and others, they call it as Paramatma. And the devotees call him as Bhagavan. So the same truth is spoken in three different ways by three different sets of people. But substance is one. That's what you have to remember. The same one substance is referred by, depending on who refers to that, Upanishads will refer to it as Brahman, Brahmedi, and then the yogis will refer to it as Paramatma, and the devotees will refer to it as Bhagavan. So the same subject is spoken in the same way. So, although it is spoken in three different ways, the substance is one. That is the most important point. Because, just like as you know, that sometimes you see in the shops, they make biscuits in different forms, isn't it? For children, to relish it, they will sometimes make the biscuits in the form of a cat, in the form of a cow, in the form of a bear, so many different forms they make, and they pack it all together. And when you open the packet and show it to children, children will say, oh, I want this biscuit, which is the form of a bear, or which is the form of a cat or a dog or whatever that is. But once you put it inside, it is the taste is the same. There is no difference, is there? Whether it's cat or dog or anything, it's the same thing. So similarly, it is the children who misunderstand, like they are carried away by that form there, what is shown in the packet, and they get, they think in those terms. But anybody who has eaten the biscuit, he knows the taste is the same, whichever form it is. Similarly, Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan, it is the same truth, but different people, different jnanis, they go after Brahman. The yogis go after Paramatma, and the devotees go after Bhagavan. That is all. It is the same truth. One truth in three forms is realized by the different people. the taste is the same, but the form is different at that time. Only externally it is different. Now, in the Bhagavatam, you will see so many places, tell me Bhagavatam, it will say. Yatha Bhagavatam Bruyal. You will see Vasudeva also saying to Srinarada Muni, tell me Bhagavatam. So you may wonder, what is this? In the book Bhagavatam, in the middle it says, tell me Bhagavatam. Why is it? What does it mean? Then it is confusing sometimes, isn't it? That you are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and in the middle it says, tell me Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam, basically what it means is, that which is related to Krishna, about Krishna, I want to hear that. That is what Srimad, about Bhagavan. Whatever that is spoken about Bhagavan, that should talk to me about that. Otherwise, I am not interested in anything else. Everything that is related about Krishna, you should talk to me. In other words, when you start experiencing Krishna in one's own life, bhakti is such a thing. When you start experiencing Krishna, that is bhakti. And at the same time, when you know about Krishna, that is jnanam. Jnanam is just to know Krishna. What is Krishna? But when you start experiencing Krishna, that is bhakti. So like that it is spoken. So this bhakti is not a simple thing we have to understand what actually bhakti means. It is a very elaborate explanation on this word bhakti. Bhakti, where this word bhakti comes from. Once it so happened, if you must have heard about this great sage, Kabir Das. Kabir was going around. So there was one man, one businessman. He had a lot of money with him. And he went listening to so many pravachans or lectures in so many temples. And he heard everybody was talking about bhakti. They were saying that we should have bhakti, he said. So he heard this. But then he inquired, what do we have to do to get this bhakti? So one of the acharyas told him, to get bhakti, you have to pray to Krishna, and you have to chant the holy name, you have to read Srimad Bhagavatam, you have to perform austerities and penances, and in this way you should worship Krishna, deity, like this. So many instructions he gave. So this businessman, who is very wealthy, he thought that this is very complicated process, a lot of work to do, all these things. To chant, to study Bhagavatam, to take prasadam, all this. So too much. So he just didn't bother. He left it like that. So one day, Kabir Das knew that this person want to know what is bhakti. So one day what Kabir Das did was, he put a basket on his head. And you know how the vegetable vendors, when they come to sell vegetables, they will shout the names of all the vegetables. And in the street, and they'll walk through. So all the householders or housewives, when they want a particular vegetable, they'll call him in and start negotiating prices and buy. This is a system in India. So everywhere vegetables are sold like that. Vegetables is brought by the vendors. So Kabir Das put this basket on his head, and he shouted loudly, anybody wants bhakti, he said. And he started walking through the street where this wealthy man lived. So when he was walking like this, the wealthy man heard, is it somebody selling bhakti? So immediately, because he has got money, he thought, let me buy it, he said. So he called him in straight away. He said, is it good bhakti, he said, are you selling? He said, it's the best bhakti I am selling, he said. So how much is it, he said. How much does it cost, this bhakti? So Kabir says to him, that just it costs your head, he said. If you just give me your head, I'll give you the bhakti, he said. So, in other words, what involves in bhakti is understanding that what is bhakti. Otherwise one cannot, we in the name of bhakti we do so many tamasha here, so many comics we perform here in this world. And that bhakti it has nothing to do with bhakti. It is our material desires coming out in different phase, in different levels. But bhakti, what is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, dharma projida kaida votra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni krite kimvaparaishwara sadyo hridya varudhya detra krithivi Shushroshubhi Talchanal. That one verse, if you read the translation purport in the Bhagavadam, you will see that Vedavyas is saying there, Dharma Projida Gaida Votra Varamo. It is not the type of bhakti what we are practicing, is discussed in the Bhagavadam. Narmatsaranam Satam Vedyam. It is released by those who are free from envy. Narmatsaranam, free from envy and competitive nature. Satam Vedyam, it is always relishable, not for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, throughout life, day in and day out, they are in that bhakti. Vastavam atra vastu shivadam. Vastavam atra vastu shivadam. That what is spoken in this is vastavam. Vastavam means what is real, absolute, absolutely truth, absolute truth. Vastavam atra vastu shivadam. Vastu shivadam, it says. What is this vastu? Vastu means that thing which is auspicious. By getting that, you are released from this conditioned life once for all. Atra vastu shivadam, and not only that, it will relieve on from tapatraya unmulanam. Tapatrayam, tapatrayam means adhyatmikam, adibhaudikam, adidevikam. Three things. Simple terms, if you mention this, we can say adhyatmikam means all that is related to the mind. Problems related to the mind. Basically related to the mind. Due to different desires and different vasanas inside, suffering from that. Something happens in life and get frustrated with that, or sometimes get excited about something. All this is both ways, it causes problems. So, this is called adhyatmika travam. Adhyatmika travam. Then, tabatrayam in molanam. Adhyatmikam. Then, adibhaudikam. Adibhaudikam means all that is related to the body. What the body gets, the distress, what the body receives in this world. Illnesses or sometimes external thing, sometimes body gets punished in different ways, isn't it? All that is adi bhaudiyam. And then there is adi devigam, which is tsunami and all the other, like the floods we had 2 days ago. That's all adi devigam, for which cause is unknown. So adhyatmikam, adi devigam, adi bhaudiyam, adi devigam, three things. And these three things has to go to become happy in this life. Otherwise it's not possible. Because to come to that peaceful condition, otherwise the living entity or the conditioned soul in this world is suffering from all these three things. There is no other distress outside these three. If you look everyone's life, anyone can see that either you are suffering with the mind, or you are suffering with the body, or you are suffering from the external world, isn't it? So all these three are our distresses. If that goes away, then we are released from this distress. Tapatrayam unmulanam. So Bhagavatam is saying, Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam. That this vastu, what is discussed here, if once that goes in, then what happens is tapatrayam goes away. Tapatrayam goes away. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for this tapatrayam, release of all the tapatrayam, it says here. So what does bhakti means now? Bhakti is the opposite word of vibhakti. Vibhakti is the proper word, which is bhakti is coming from that. Bhakti and vibhakti are the two things. So, generally, this is little bit difficult sometimes to get through this point. Anyway, we'll see. Generally, there are three states of existence, isn't it? In Srimad Bhagavatam, and in Bhagavad Gita also, there is indication of this. Srimad Bhagavatam, a lot more in detail. Jagrada, Sopnam, Sushupti. Three states of existence. Jagrada, Sopnam and Sushupti. Which means, vacant state, dream state and deep sleep. Three states of existence for everybody. Everybody in this world goes through these three states of existence. This Ekadasha Skandam is a detailed discussion of these three states of existence. A lot is discussed in Ekadasham, these three states, because they are so important to know what are we actually. isn't it? This question comes, this is what we are searching now. We have given up all other activities. We are trying to find out what we are. That is the goal now. So in order to know that, one has to know these three states of existence, its interactions, its features, characteristics, everything, one has to know very well. And the more we discuss that, the more our head gets clearer about the instructions Krishna gives to Uddhava. It's all based on these three states of existence, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. Normally, when we are in Jagrat state, which we call as Jagrat, the vacant state, mind, senses, intelligence, body, everything is active, isn't it? Everything is active. When we go to the Swapnam state, what happens? The dream state, immediately the body stops. Body has no more effect on us, isn't it? Us means the individual living entity, the soul. Soul is not affected by body anymore. Body is lying down there. Body has stopped its function, influence on the soul. Then who is functioning there? In the Swapnam state, it is the subtle body, isn't it? Where the mind is active. The mind creates the world. The mind takes the living entity from one place to another. It takes to America, it takes to Australia, it takes to Europe. Everywhere it goes in that state. Although lying down in the bed, but still he is in America for hours together, either visiting friends. And so many things happen in the dream. There is no limit what cannot happen in the dream state. So there the mind is active. The mind is keeping him busy. And then when you go into the deep sleep, all the activities of the mind is stopped and activities of the body is also stopped already. So it is in that state of existence in deep sleep that the living entity is released from the material existence to a large degree, to a very high degree. He is released from material existence. And say we went to sleep at night, in the morning when we wake up, what happens first thing? What is the first impact on us? From deep sleep, when you're coming back to awakened state, what happens? This is what we should think very carefully. It is at that time, actually, the first thing that comes out from us is our ego, false ego. This is the beauty of that. The false ego manifests first. How? In the shape of I am there. I exist. Isn't it? The I-ness or I exist comes out at that point from that body which was lying there, which was in deep sleep, where it was not even aware that I existed. I didn't exist at that time. He doesn't know that false ego as it is referred to, the false ego. False I do not exist at that time. Real I exists at that time. So there are two I's in the same, but in illusion begins when you come to the vacant condition. You see, when you come to the vacant condition, only this illusory I comes in. Up to that point, or the false I comes up. Otherwise the I, which I am in the deep sleep, what do I know about this world? So this world exists for me as long as this false I exists. Otherwise it doesn't exist for me, because it is through this ahankaram or false ego. Because as soon as you wake up in the morning, it starts, isn't it? Oh, I got up now. First thing is, I got up. As soon as I get up, then what? Then start engaging all my different tools. Like mind goes one direction, senses goes in another direction, intelligence works in another way. There begins the whole Jagrat activities, waken state. In the night, next night again, the same thing all goes away and we come through the deep sleep again. So deep sleep, dream state or the vacant state, in all these three states, I exist. But you can see that how the false I takes over, which is called ahankaram, the false ego. The ahankaram is the first thing that is appearing at the time of coming back to our material identity. In other words, the I thinking that I am this body, that is how we begin our day every morning, isn't it? As soon as you come out of deep sleep to vacant state, the first thing comes out is the I am this body. Now I let me start my life based on this body. And that although I was for hours together, I had nothing to do with this body. Suddenly I am awake and I am busy with my body now. You see? So, this is what Bhagavatam is saying there, that as long as the, as long as one is busy with that body, naturally your activities will be based on this false identity itself. It begins from there itself. False identity. So, this false identity, which is called ahankaram. Ahankaram means this false ego. It has got different dimensions to it. That also you can see. Jnanis discuss this in detail in their literature. In the different program, they'll discuss this. They'll say, it manifests in seven different forms, it says. In seven different forms it manifests. First starts with me, I. Then the next one, mine. Then, from me, to me. Like this, it says like seven of them. By me, for me, in me, from me, of me. These are the seven. There is nothing else outside this. Everything in relationship with me. Of me, for me, by me, mine, me, like this. These seven different forms, this ahankaram or false ego manifest. So when the false ego is present in us, when we come to the wake-up condition, immediately take shape in these seven different ways. And they are called vibhaktis. You know what vibhakti means? In the grammar, in the saptami it is called. Saptami means the seven different ways of expressing these case endings. It's also there in English, isn't it? Case endings. But where does this come from? This is called the Sapta Vibhakti, or Saptami they call it. The seven different kinds of bhakti, it comes from this false ego. False ego, it is related with that. When all these seven different kinds of false ego goes away, that means our false ego has gone completely. And that is bhakti. So, these seven vibhaktis, which are vibhakti, it is called vibhakti, these seven vibhaktis goes away, then there is bhakti. Otherwise there is no bhakti. In other words, what Shastram is saying is that unless all the vibhakti, ahankaram, false ego goes away, there cannot be bhakti in a person. So just imagine how powerful, how pure bhakti is. How pure bhakti is. Then, the jnanis, they know this. That this thing called ahankaram, in the form of ahankaram, the living entity is existing at that time. In the form of ahankaram, it exists like that. But when it is situated in its pure form of soul, as spirit soul, then he is released from this false ego. He is released from this false ego. And that is exactly what is happening in deep sleep. You see, in deep sleep, what normally happens is, this false ego goes away. And when the false ego goes away, we get a slight feeling of our true identity as spirit soul. That is the reason when we come out of deep sleep, we feel some happiness from that, isn't it? We all say that, oh, I really had a good sleep. I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I wish you could sleep like this every day. Some comments like that we make, isn't it? Some days we get such sleep, where this ahankaram has gone away, false ego has gone away from us. And that state of consciousness, when there is no false ego, because false ego wakes you up in the morning. False ego wakes you up in the morning and keeps you busy with that whole day. And in the night, when you go into deep sleep, the false ego goes. And then you are close to your spiritual identity. That is why that reason it is spoken like this. You see, in the Jagrat state, when this false ego is existing, we fight each other, isn't it? Hindu is fighting Muslim, Muslim is fighting Hindu, Christian is fighting Muslim, Muslim is fighting Christian. Like this, all this fighting. As soon as they fall into deep sleep, there is no Hindu, no Muslim, no Christian. All sleeping comfortably in their original identity as spirit soul. No ahankaram there. So therefore you can imagine how silly and foolish is this fighting that goes on in this world. Out of the three states of existence, in one state, material nature has not even allowed them to look at each other. Previously, it's spoken like, it's a very interesting thing, that, you know, devotees of sometimes Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, they fight each other. One will say Shiva is the supreme, one will say Vishnu is the supreme. And they want to sort it out in the street, fighting each other. So when two of them fought each other very much, they got tired. So they slept in one room. And during the sleep, they were putting their hands on each other. There was neither Shiva nor Vishnu there. They were in such comfortably situated. As soon as they woke up in the morning, again the fight started. So this is how silly the whole thing is. That Jagral Swapnam Sushupti, that Sushupti states, one is released from all identities, because come from the false ego, the Ahankaram. That identity is completely gone at that time. And you can see at that time, there is no fight. Everything is peaceful. He is properly situated at that time in his position, in his true identity as spirit soul. That is, he is closer to that at that time. Although there is samogunam present there, still he is free from ahankaram. So that helps him to regain that peacefulness. Because of that only he is feeling that peacefulness and happiness. Because false ego doesn't exist. False ego has gone away for some time. But as soon as he wakes up, he comes back to it with the full full steam. Now, so Krishna says there in Bhagavad Gita that bhakti, this is the bhakti what Krishna is talking about. That bhaktya tonanyaya shakya ahamemam vidha arjuna nyadam drashtanja jatena pravashtanja parandava. Krishna says to Arjuna in the 11th chapter, bhaktya tonanyaya shakya ahamemam vidha arjuna. Only through bhakti you can understand me, Krishna says. That unless through bhakti one has approached Krishna, you cannot understand Krishna. That is the instructions Krishna has spoken like that. In fact, this thing called false ego, ahankaram, that is also in one's dharma. Dharma means, you look at it this way, that when does this false ego comes? In dharma. In adharma there is no false ego. In dharma it is coming. How come it comes in dharma? Give you an example. Sometimes have you seen that some rich man is distributing food or some cash to poor people? And you'll see in the holy places like Haridwar, Vrindavanam, Benares and all that. In places like that. When they distribute, they will let the people to queue up and to give them food to each one of them, a feast or whatever, according to their plans, they'll give food. But sometimes what happens, those who have received, they will come back in the queue again to get a second time. So when they come, the man who is distributing will say, oh, I've given you already, why have you come again second time? So you can see, although he is doing a charity, first time he has given, but when he came second time he got upset. He doesn't want to give anything anymore. You see, he starts shouting at him, yell at him. Get out of the queue, he says to him. Go away from here. He says all these kind of things. You can see, watch all these things. So, although in dharmam, the ahankaram is still there. Ahankaram has not left him. Here is the difference. With Krishna, this doesn't exist. This exists for us. Look at us. We go to Krishna. Today we say to Krishna one thing. We want one desire, we say to Krishna. After a month or so, we go with second request. Has Krishna any time told us, look, I've given you one before. Now you're coming second time again in the queue? Krishna never asked that question. You see? Does Krishna ask that question to anybody any time? No. Krishna never asked that question. Krishna's policy, keep on giving, giving, giving. We keep on asking, asking, asking. Our policy, asking, asking, asking. Krishna's policy, giving, giving, giving. So there you can see, Krishna has no ahankaram. That is why it is like that. We have got ahankaram, so we cannot tolerate it. We think everything should work according to our plan, isn't it? So therefore, we won't offer anything. We won't agree. It has to work according to our plan. We have decided certain things, it should work like that. But Krishna, there is a difference. Krishna doesn't have a plan like that. Anyone who comes and asks, Krishna says, yes, if your karma allows you, you can have it. But otherwise not. So therefore, the important thing to remember is that the best devotee is Krishna actually. Because he's the only person who has the devotee's qualification. In the Ekadasha Skandam you will see, Krishna has made a statement. What statement is? Sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam mama. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam mama. Sadhus or pure devotees, their heart is mine, Krishna says. This statement exactly means this. A sadhu does not think like the way, or a pure devotee of Krishna doesn't think like that. He thinks like Krishna thinks. That's the difference. Krishna thinks like this. Never ask a second time, why have you come? No. And freely giving to everybody, that is a pure devotee's symptom. He does not think that, oh, he has come before, I have given him something, why is he coming back again? No. That question is never, never asked by a pure devotee. He acts like Krishna. Giving is his policy. He wants to give to everything to others so that they become Krishna's devotee. That is the policy of it. Krishna's policy is like that. This statement is in the Bhagavatam. Ekadasha Skandam says that, Sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam mama. Sadhu's heart is my heart. That means there is no difference between sadhu and me. That is why, normally when we ask Krishna something, who makes the decision? Krishna doesn't make the decision. Krishna consults them, these great devotees. And they ask them, shall we do this, like this? What's your opinion? If they say something, Krishna says, yes, let it be like that. There's no difference between their heart and Krishna's heart. That is why these great souls have such a power that they acquire by their purity and their pure devotion to Krishna. Whatever they say will come true. Because if they say something, that is what Krishna has decided. That is that relationship between that pure devotee's heart and Krishna's heart. There is a connection like that. That's why in that verse it says, Sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam mama. Sadhunam hridayam mama. That is another important thing what Krishna says there. Though, in the Bhagavatam it says, Dharma projita kaidavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tabatrayon mulanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahapunikrade Kimma Bharai Ishwara Sadhyo Hridhyavarudhyade Tragradevi Shushroshubhi Talkshanal. That these are the introductory verses in the Bhagavatam. The first verse in the Bhagavatam, which is Janmadhyaya Seyata, that verse, that is the whole essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, that first verse. The remaining 17,999 verses is nothing but an expansion of this first verse. That's why that verse is so important, the first verse, Janmadhyaya Seyata. So, what is spoken in that verse is explained in detail in the remaining part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the second verse begins like this. Sadhyo hridhya virudhyade etra kritivi shushroshubhi talkshanal. Bhagavatam says that if you have become a devotee like this, the way it is discussed here, as soon as you have come to that state, what happens? Krishna walks into your heart. Krishna, sadhyo hridhya avarudhyade, it says avarudhyade. Avarudhyade means he walks in, jumps into the heart. And shushroshubhi talkshanal. And why? Because Krishna walks in and makes us to, wants to hear about Krishna. That is the desire. Immediately that desire will come out to hear about Krishna. Now, this is a very important thing, hearing about Krishna. Normally, why this hearing process is given so much importance? This, we must be very, very strongly convinced on this point. Otherwise, we will not understand why Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, why Srimad Bhagavatam was discussed by the sages in Naimisharanyam, why Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Narada Maharshi to Vedavyas. All these things is based on this principle called Shravanam. Shravanam means hearing, hearing process. Such an important process. Such an important process. And if you go through Srimad Bhagavatam when you have some free time, just take Srimad Bhagavatam and start going through chapter by chapter. 335 chapters are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. See in how many chapters this importance of hearing is stressed. Nothing else. Hearing process is stressed. So forcefully stressed from the very beginning to the very end. In different ways. You will see that. We'll give you some examples also on that later. So why is like that? Why hearing? Why not seeing? Why not tasting prasadam or whatever it is? Or why not travel, going to holy places? Why not doing something else? Or some another sensual activity? No. Hearing. Only hearing, nothing else. Why is like that? Let's see. In the human body, we have got two kinds of senses, isn't it? One is called karmendriyam and the other one is called jnanendriyam. Senses of knowledge and senses of action. Senses of action is called karmendriyam. and senses of knowledge is called Jnanendriyam. Jnanendriyam and Karmendriyam. Five senses of knowledge and five senses of action. Out of these two, the senses of action is inferior. Senses of action is inferior because it is only related to the body. And our problem here is what is related to the mind, isn't it? The mind is our main problem. Gross body will drop off one day anyway. But it is a subtle body that has generated the gross body. First of all, where did this gross body come from? It came from the subtle body. Subtle body, when the karma matured, it took the form of a gross body. When the subtle body, vasanas in the subtle body, when it took a shape, it took the form of a gross body. So these are sheath outside covering the soul. Annamayam, pranamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam, anandamayam, the five different sheaths. Similarly, the gross body, the subtle body, they all cover the soul. But it is from the subtle body, the gross body has come. So this gross body is the one which are the five senses of action present in. Vaka, Pani, Padam, Payu, Upastham. That is, these are the five things. The word, the hands, the legs, the rectum and the genitals. These are the five senses of action. Now, these five senses of action, which is called the Karmendriyam, they keep the body engaged. They keep the body engaged. But as you get more and more subtle in our material body, in our body, you will see subtle than the Karmendriyam is the Jnanendriyam. It's become more sushmam or more subtle. The senses becomes more subtle. The five senses, what are they? The shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. Shabdam is the sound, which is the ear. The sparsham, the touch. Rupam, the eyes. Rasam, the taste. And gandham, the smell. So we have got five senses of knowledge and five senses of action. Five senses of action relates to the body. And the five senses of knowledge relates to the mind. Because in the process of engaging these five senses of knowledge, the mind automatically gets involved, implicated in that. Mind has a tremendous impact in there. Now, out of these five senses of knowledge, which means it is much more on a subtle level, more subtle it has become. Again, they have graded them according to its subtlety. What is most subtle is spoken first, which is Shabdam. What is most subtle is spoken first, which is called Shabdam. So, Shabdam or the sound is the most subtle of all the five senses of knowledge. The most gross form of all the five senses is Gandham, smell. Smell or Gandham is the most gross form of the senses of knowledge. And that is why you see, animals have this tendency to smell everything, isn't it? They first smell everything. That is their most powerful sense. The other sense has not developed for them. More than that, this sense has developed for them very much. So therefore, they give priority to smelling. Any animal, doesn't matter. It will take smell. Smelling is their greatest weapon. They know by smell what is in store anywhere else. They know what's happening. So the smelling sense is the most powerful. When you come out of that animal kingdom and come to human form, little by little, as maybe in one birth or two births, whatever it is, we also change our sensual perceptions. For example, as soon as the lowest one is the gandham, and the next one is the taste, rasam, or taste. The smell was the lowest one. Subtle than that is the next one, which is the tasting one. That's why sometimes you see people who are more in that level, they like to taste everything a little bit, isn't it? If you serve a feast, they'll take a little bit of this and this and taste and taste. Why? That propensity is from that sense, which is strongly in them. When you go little more than that, become more subtle, it comes to the activities of the eyes. What is rupam? Rupam means the form. Form becomes important for us because it's become a little bit more subtle. So form has become important. As you go further, still more subtle is the sparsham or the touch, sense of touch. That becomes a little bit more subtle. But subtle than all these things is Shabdam, the sound. Through sound, that which is the most subtle element in the five senses of knowledge, if one develops that subtlety, then that will have a quick effect on the on the person. Quick effect on the person. And that is the reason why hearing process is given so much importance. Hearing process is given so much importance for this reason. That hearing process, by hearing alone, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and all other Vedic literature will stress on this one point. Here, Bhagavatam, here, here, here. Nothing else. There is no other importance given to anything else. All other activities. Because normally, what do we say in the material life? Material life, we say like this. You have been hearing so long. Do something practical now, we say, isn't it? But in spiritually, it's just the opposite. You have done enough now, stop it and stop hearing now. This is how the spiritual life works. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for that process. It is not for just doing, doing, doing all day and night. You can do it, but at the end you will be busy with your karma indriyam, and at the end there will have no impact on the jnanindriyam, on the senses of knowledge. Senses of knowledge will start working when the sound vibration, even if you look at creation, see how creation happens in the Bhagavatam. If you look in the third canto, where does creation begin from? Begins from the sound. Begins from the sound. So important is this one sense called the Shravanendriyam. Shravanam. That is why it is spoken like that. Shravanam. Shrinodam Sakatha Krishna. In the second chapter, Bhagavatam begins like this. Shrinodam Sakatha Krishna. Punya Shravana Girtanam. Hridyandastohi Abhadrani. Vidhunodi Suhral Sadam. If you hear about Krishna, what will happen? Shrinodam Sakatha Krishna. Krishna Katha, if you hear, what will happen is Punya Shravana Girtanam. Krishna's Katha is Punyam. It is auspicious. Shravanam Kirtanam. And for hearing and glorifying, there is nothing else superior than that. So if you continuously hear that, what will happen? Hridyandastohi Abhadrani. Whatever that is accumulated in the Hridayam. Hridayam means heart. This heart is not the same heart what we talk about by the surgeons and the doctors. That heart is here. This heart is what we talk about is on this side. That's why when we say to somebody, me, we point out this side, not this side, isn't it? You always want me. Like that. So, this heart is on this side. It is actually the central pivot in the spiritual center of this body. That is here. And that is where the soul is present. Soul's presence is experienced there. Often people misunderstand these things. What they say is, oh, when you do a heart transplant, because they are thinking the soul is here in the heart. So when you do a heart transplant, does the soul goes along with it? That's it. This heart is only a mechanical facility provided there. It has nothing to do with the soul. The soul's presence within the body is its spiritual center, which is on the right hand side for everyone. And it is here that the soul is located. So therefore it said like this, that hridyandastohi abhadrani vidhunodi. All the inauspicious things, because what is actually causing us not to remember Krishna or not to serve Krishna, or not to develop Krishna consciousness, is abhadram, inauspicious things in our heart. All that will go away if you hear about Krishna. So this hearing process, Shravanam, has been given the highest priority of all the spiritual activities. Nothing is comparable to Shravanam. Shravanam is the highest process. And therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, knowing this very well, Parikshit Maharaj could have done in 7 days, he could have built 70 temples, isn't he? He was a big emperor. He could have done that. No, he just sat down to hear about Krishna. Why? Because he knew, Sudev Goswami knew, that hearing is the process by which one can progress spiritually. It is directly connected to the heart. That hearing is directly connected to the heart. And all the impurities that are built up around our consciousness is cleared up by hearing about Krishna. That is why so much importance is given to hearing. Hearing and hearing alone. Nothing else. That is why such an important process, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, is such an important thing. It is not for any other reason why Bhagavatam has been spoken like this. Because it's a very technical thing also, if you think about it. That out of the five senses of knowledge, the most subtle element is hearing, Shravanam. Ears are the most subtle. Similarly, process of hearing is the process of Vedic literature, is hearing. It is through hearing. Because you see, even if you take Jabam, Dhyanam, Kirtanam, deity worship, any other process, if you take, everywhere there is this Aham, me, present there. I am doing deity worship. I am chanting the rounds. I am I am taking prasadam, or I am doing this, I comes in all these things. Whereas in the hearing process, you are not doing anything. You are just sitting there, leaving the ears open, to allowing Krishna consciousness to come in. That is all that you are doing there in the hearing process. That is why Shravanam process, why from time immemorial, this process of Shravanam has been given so much importance. Hearing about Krishna, 7 days Parikshit had, and these 7 days he did not think about doing anything else. Again and again he kept repeating to Sukadeva Goswami, let me hear about Krishna, let me hear about Krishna, let me hear about Krishna. So from this you can see that the proper process of spiritual advancement is based on this hearing process of Shravanam. Shravanam. Now, if you look into the 9 processes of devotional service in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Prahlada talks about it, isn't it? Prahlada Maharaj says there, what does he begin with? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnor, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. So, Shravanam is again the process to begin with. So important, this process of hearing, that anyone who has understood Srimad Bhagavatam, he could not stay out of hearing. Hearing process has to go on forever. It is that what purifies a person. So, the Shravanam. So, as I mentioned before, the most subtle thing of all these things is the Shravanam process. If you look into Bhagavatam, I'm just pointing out a few things in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For your own benefit, if you see, you can just to verify this on your own, in the Bhagavatam you will see in how many places this Shravanam has been given importance. I have taken note of 4 cantos in the Bhagavatam, and the 4 cantos I have noted down, and somewhere about 50 different places it's been spoken about the importance of hearing. Nothing else. Except hearing, nothing else is mentioned. 1116. I'll give you a few verses. 1116. It says, Kova bhagavadastasya punyashlogedha karmana shuddhigamo na shranuya desha kalimalavaham. For purifying oneself from Kali's influence, one should hear. It says there, shuddhigamo na shranuya desha kalimalavaham. Then 1-14. Krishna says there, 1-14. Tasmadegena manasa bhagavan sattvadampadi shrodavya kirtidavyascha dheya pujyascha nityada. Again hearing is given the importance. Tasmadegena manasa, after hearing, talking about all the all different things there, Sudha Goswami says there, that Sudha says to Shavanagrishi, tasmad, therefore, egena manasa bhagavan sattvadampadi, with a completely single-minded, with fully pointed direction, shrodavya, he should hear about Krishna. That is what Sudha Goswami says there to Shavanagrishi. Tasmad egena manasa bhagavan sattvadampadi, about Krishna, shrodavya kirtidavyascha dhyaya bhujyascha nityada. You should hear, you should chant, and you should meditate on Krishna. Unless you hear, how can one meditate about Krishna? Then again, in 2 words, he says here, shrunodam sakata Krishna punyashravanagirtanam hridyandasto hyabhadrani vidhinodi suhrul sadam. After that, in the 3rd chapter, so continuously, this point is very stressed. 1345, if you look, these are the verse numbers, so that you want to aham jadhyagamam tatra nivishtastha danyugrihal soham va shravayishyami yatha neenam yatha madi. Sudha Goswami is saying to Shavanagrishi and others, I have heard everything from Sudeva Goswami. Now what I will do is aham jadhyagamam tatra nivishtastha danyugrihal. By His mercy, whatever that is coming to my mind, I will make you also to hear that. He says, Soham va shravayishyami, I'll allow you to hear that. Yatha adhidam, yatha madhi. According, I am not saying that I have understood everything, or I have heard, or I remember everything. According to my capacity, whatever I have understood, whatever I have heard, I will allow you also to hear that. And that is how Sudha Goswami starts his next chapter.
So you will see there that in the, and then if you go on, keep looking at Bhagavatam, you will see at different places how the same point is spoken. In the 8th chapter, Krishna says there, sorry, in the 8th chapter, 1836, you see, that here, Kunti Devi's prayers. Kunti Devi is the first devotee who comes in and talks about her relationship with Krishna, isn't it? So Kunti Devi's prayers, what does Kunti Devi say? Shrunandi gayandi gananandhya vishnasha smarandi nandandi tavehidam jana ta eva bashyandi ajriyena tavago bhava pravaho paramam padam bhujam. First thing Kunti Devi said about Krishna was Shrunandi. By hearing about whom? So that means Kunti Devi knew the importance of the process of hearing. That is what it means. And if you look in every verses, in every 1551, this is under every, on every chapter, when Sukadeva Goswami concludes, he will mention one verse, what is the benefit of hearing this, isn't it? Have you noticed that? In so many different chapters, particularly about Bhishma Stuti and Kunti Devi's prayers. Similarly, when it comes to Pandavas going back to the spiritual world, Pandavas Surgaravanam, it is called the Pandavas Pandavas Surgaravanam, or they call it also Mahaprasthanam. It is another name given to is Mahaprasthanam. That means after Krishna's departure from this world, Pandavas are leaving this world one after the other. That is called Pandavas Mahaprasthanam, going back to their own positions. So that chapter, Pandavas Mahaprasthanam, is an important chapter in the first canto. At the end of that chapter, Sudeva Goswami says here, one who hear this Pandava's exit from this world, lebdhau hara ubhaktim ubhaydi siddhim, he will develop pure devotion. So all these things has a value to it. It is not that simply Sudeva Goswami is saying something, oh, if you hear this you will get benefit. No, he has spoken to make us understand that hearing about this Pandava's departure to the spiritual world, sayat yashadhayaidal bhagaval priyanam pandosudanam idi samprayanam shranotyalam susthenam pavitram labdhu aharau bhakti ubhaydi siddhim. If you hear about Pandava's departure from this world, Sudeva Goswami says, shranotyalam susthenam pavitram, which is the pavitram which is very pure, labdhu aharau bhakti ubhaydi siddhim, one will develop pure devotion to Krishna. Bhakti harau, labdhva harau bhakti mubedi siddhim. That kind of devotion to Hari Krishna will develop in such a person's heart. Like this, we can go on for many, many cantos. It's the same. All you have to do is to look through it and understand this importance of hearing. Even one of the instances, when Pridhu Maharaj, if you see the Pridhu Maharaj story in the fourth canto, what happened to Pridhu Maharaj? Pridhu Maharaj eventually sorted all the problems in this planet and eventually was going back. Before that, he glorified Krishna. Krishna sent the four Kumaras to instruct Pridhu Maharaj. Pridhu Maharaj is a partial incarnation of Krishna. But still, he came here as a king. And in order to show an example to everybody, Pridhu Maharaj was presenting the glorifying Krishna, that the king's duty, first duty is to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna sends, in return, Krishna sends the four Kumaras to instruct Pridhu Maharaj on spiritual knowledge. When they came, four Kumaras asked Pridhu Maharaj, what is the benediction you want from us? Normally, what do we say? We'll say, four Kumaras, what can you offer us? What can you give us the best? Isn't it? That's the kind of thing what we're looking for. But Pridhu Maharaj answer, if you see, you see in the Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, you will see there, what did Pridhu Maharaj says to says to him? He says there that 431, he says here that give me that thing so that Pridhu Maharaj says here, all I want is Pradumaraj's prayers to the four Kumaras was, give me 10,000 years, he says. Not one said, 10,000. He wanted 10,000 years so that he could hear about Krishna again and again. So even Pradumaraj is telling us that this is the process, hearing about Krishna. The importance of hearing is discussed throughout Bhagavadam. It says here that the important point, Kirtu Urdhagidaya Pumbi Trailoke Tatra Tatraha Pravishta Karna Rendreshu Srinam Ramasada Miva. That Srimad Bhagavadam's prayers is such that all I am asking for, he says, give me 10,000 years to hear about Krishna. To hear about Krishna. So in the prayers of Prithu Maharaj, you will notice this important point mentioned. Prithu Maharaj didn't even ask that, oh, offer me liberation or offer me this or anything. No other thing he has asked. He only asked this one thing, that I want to hear about Krishna with 10,000 years. Karna ayushame vara, he says like that in the Srimad Bhagavadam. So, importance of hearing. Now, the way Shravanam, hearing process works is, the way it works is, that when we hear about Krishna, so long as we are hearing, one day that hearing alone is sufficient to change our consciousness. That is why this hearing process is given so much importance. That simply by hearing about Krishna, that we get automatically that possibility of purification happens inside. Provided, and it depends on the quality of hearing, the results also, how the results will come. So that is why hearing is given so much importance in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then, but this Parikshit Maharaj, who decided to hear Bhagavatam for 7 days, it did not happen like that, automatically like that. He has come to a certain state of mind where he was willing to hear about Krishna. That is why his hearing process was far superior to others. He was able to hear better than all of us. He was able to concentrate in his hearing to such a degree that mind was not at all affected by what was going on inside. So similarly, in hearing it is an important factor. When we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, how do we understand a person is hearing properly or not? This is an important thing. Everybody would like to know that. Am I hearing it properly? Or what is that I am not able to hear properly? Isn't it? In this aspect, one has to remember that hearing becomes perfect, or hearing becomes to its peak, it hits peak, when its quality of the mind also, of the person. The quality of the mind also has a big role. For example, just to tell you something to get this point across, that sometimes you see some people are not ready for hearing. They can't hear it. These are the people, they'll come, they'll go away. They can't sit and hear anything. Why? Because it's not being offensive. When we leave our animal body in a previous life, when our hearing power or this subtle sense of hearing has not developed enough. That means, you see, human society, not everyone is on the same consciousness, isn't it? Sometimes we are 90% animal, 10% human being, isn't it? So otherwise animal activities there's not much of a difference. Strictly speaking, we are 99%, you can say, animals, and 1% we have humanness. Humanness means this ability to use these senses of knowledge in a better way. Ability to use them properly. That is what differentiates from the animals. Animals have got all the senses of action, what we have got. They are also passing stool, they are also having sex life, they are also eating, they are also using their hands and legs to fight. So they are all used by the animals. But in human body, it is the senses of knowledge that is more developed in us. And when we are able to utilize them better, we are more on a human level than on the animal level. So those who are unable to hear
at all, you have to take it that they have not developed that sense enough to come and sit and hear about Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is very straightforward about it. You have to hear about Krishna. There is no compromise on that. This is the process, and that will be the process, and that was the process in all time to come. And that process you can't change because it's been established by Krishna himself. How can we change it? So if we are not able to do it, we have to understand, we are not able to come to that level of understanding or hearing process. Some people you will see, they'll come, they'll open the door and look and close and they'll go. So that means they've gone a little bit ahead. Otherwise they couldn't even open the door. They are nonsense. They are just sitting and wasting time there. They'll just walk through. They don't have even time to walk in or look at it. Because that is the state of hearing senses developed in that. The next one comes, opens, looks for 1 or 2 minutes, closes the door, goes. So they have gone a little bit. Instead of 1 or 2%, it's gone 5% probably. Or 10%. It's on the human level. And then, those who have come, what happens? Some comes and then they sit. When they sit there, the mind is at job's place or home or somewhere else. So mind goes all over. Mind is not able to focus on Krishna. Mind is not able to extract what is being spoken. It's not having a direct impact on one's own consciousness. That's also very, very difficult. And that is another stage, but still he is able to come and sit. He thinks that he wants to hear Bhagavatam. So he sits there. But mind is not under control. Mind goes everywhere. Mind has become wavering very much. It's going in all directions. Cannot focus on anything. The mind gets distracted. Thinking, sitting here, physically present here, but mentally somewhere else. Then another world. Either anything, you know, it can't be anything you could be thinking about. So that is another stage. Then there is another person who is a little different than that. He has come, he sat here, but he didn't hear anything. He didn't hear anything. Why? What happened to him? Because he was in samadhi whole time. So he couldn't hear anything. He also sat here, but along with others. And then at the end he got up and he left. But he has also progressed to some degree. So like this, step by step, it is only you can, those who are hearing to some degree, you can say that, although you have not captured everything, but some of them has captured and something has stayed inside, most of it has leaked out, but what has stayed inside, that is they have come up to almost about 40% or 50% of the human level. That's all. When it becomes 100%, everything that is spoken about Krishna is totally absorbed and gone in. You are 100% and you are as good as Krishna's qualities has come to us. That is the human body. Human body, when it was created by Brahma, there is a discussion coming about that. The beauty of human body. Brahmava loga dushanam udamava deva, it says there. Brahma is experimenting with different bodies. He's experimenting. Created birds, bees, trees, plants, reptiles, and all kinds of living entities. Nowhere Brahma felt any satisfaction. Because it is this human body Brahma discovered that has got the capacity of Brahmavalokadarshanam. Brahmavalokadarshanam means the capacity to realize the self that is only in this human body. That is why it's given so much importance. How to realize the self. That is only possible in the human body, to self-realization. And that is what his spiritual life is all about. When we are not inquiring about the self, when we are not trying to find out what we are, what good is there, talking all other things in this world. We may have done many, many things, but ultimately to bring us to this point, all the shastram has been written. Because if you say this to somebody in a straightforward way, nobody will take it. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam was written, Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and so many other Puranas were written, Upanishads were written, all Vedic literature, all these great Acharyas had come, all commentaries they have written, purports they have written, they have travelled and spoken about it. What is the goal of all these things? One and only one goal, to realize the self.
isn't it? At the moment, we have identified with the body and with the mind and the senses, and is rotting in that process. But we are not able to come out of it. We are so much convinced that we are this body, isn't it? It is on this concept that we are living day after day. And never once the thought has come to us that we are not this body, is it? It never comes. Even after studying everything, never comes. Here this, because we also not believe in it. Even if it is spoken, still we think, is it true all what is said in the Bhagavatam? We still think like that. There is a, this is all very, this Ekadasi Skandham stimulates our thought a lot. There was a young man once. This young man was very attached to his mother. Very attached to his mother. So, what he did was, mother got very ill and she was close to death. So he goes to a great yogi whom he knew and prayed to yogi, "Sir, my mother is almost on the deathbed. I am very attached to my mother. Please do something so she can live some more time, 25 years or 30 years, whatever you can give, extend her life. I'll be very grateful." And he started praying and crying and everything to the yogi. He knew that the yogi was capable of doing such a thing. Yogi heard all that. Yogi said, "Yes, that can be done. That's not a problem. But what about you? You are asking for extending a mother's life. But what do you know about your own life? How long is it going to be there? Why are you so concerned about mother only?" So, when this question was posed by the yogi, this young man started thinking, why such a thought never came to me? Never came up such a thought in my mind. We also think, isn't it, like that. Parents think that if my son survives, if he lives, I'm happy. Whatever happens to me doesn't matter. At least let the family live through. Like that. Householder things like that. Mother things also. Husband, father things. So many people, relatives also think like that. At least my children should survive. Never once we think, what about why we don't survive, should not survive. We think that we will survive. This is the problem, isn't it? We think death won't come to us. Death won't come to us. But death will come to my mother, or to my father, or to my brother, whoever it is. Death will come to him. We are convinced. We feel that very strongly. Mother is dying, and we tell her, "Yogi, please look after my mother, so that she can survive." But never we ask, "Oh, let me live some more time." Why is that? What is the reason behind it? Why such a thought comes to us like this? It didn't happen automatically. There is a reason behind all these things. The reason is this, that every night when you go from Jagrat, Swapnam to Sushupti, into Sushupti state, every morning you come back to awakened state again, you realize that I have an eternal existence. That is strongly in our mind. Because the fact that in Sushupti state you have forgotten your identity, but still I existed. You get convinced this every single morning when we wake up, we are conscious of this. I have woken up. So because of this throughout experience in life, I got convinced that I always exist. And this is the reason why I don't feel the need to ask somebody about extending my life. Rather, I am more concerned about somebody else's life. Somebody else's life. I am more concerned about somebody else's life rather than my own. Because Krishna has opened up and given us some tips in life to think through. That every night when you go from Jagrat to Swapnam, body die, body goes. It is as good as you are dead, isn't it? The body has no function. Body is dying there, lying there. And from Swapnam, you are in a different world, in the world of mind. You are operating in that world. You are doing so many things in that activities, what is going on there. At that point in time, you exist in the astral world, or the whatever they call the subtle world, you exist. You don't exist in the gross world, because this tool of gross body is not used at that time. Although it is doing its mechanical functions, me, the soul, has nothing to do with it. It is the operations in a subtle world, what we do. As soon as we leave these two worlds, when we go to the deep sleep state, what is experienced there is a completely different experience. the false ego also has gone at that time. In the whatever that was in the Jagrat, the senses, they are not functioning. The mind, that's not functioning. False ego, that's not functioning. Even intelligence is not functioning. Purely situated in your spiritual identity as spirit soul. That experience day after day after day, Krishna is giving to us. So that has given us the understanding. That is why we are a little bit sure in our head, I exist, I don't die. And that conviction is why what is making us to think that, whereas while relating with the mother or others, we are only seeing their external body, which is disappearing slowly. So one day we get frightened seeing that that body is going to drop off and he is dead. We are not experiencing his existence. What we are experiencing is our existence every day. Therefore, we go into thinking about others. This young man, by his close reflection on that, he was able to conclude it in that way. That is why it's spoken that the existence in the three levels of existence, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, they have a very deep impact on our Krishna's philosophy in Ekadasa Skandam is completely based on this. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Krishna will say later to Uddhava, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti cha nivrutto gunavartaya sachal vilakshano jiva sachitya ena vinischidaha. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. These three states of existence. Krishna says, Nivrutto gunavrtaya. According to gunavrti, three modes of material nature, one will have a different states of existence. Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti will come to him. Because he has no control on that. He is totally controlled by the three modes of material nature. Tasam vilakshano jiva. Jiva, the soul, is completely free from all these things. He is only witnessing these changes that's happening to the existence. What is that? Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Keeps on and on and on. 10-12 hours Jagrat, then few hours Swapnam, many hours Sushupti, back to Jagrat. Like this repetition of life, day after day, that is our existence in this world. Isn't it? Krishna is saying there, Tasam vilakshano jiva. Jiva has nothing to do with any of these things. All it is doing is sakshityena vinischida. It is as a witness, it is standing there. He is not touched by any of these things. Because this jiva is nothing but Krishna's part and parcel. Isn't it? So he cannot be affected by that. He has to, Krishna is saying that I am present in every living entity. They are part and parcel of me. And they don't experience any of these things because Krishna is not experiencing any of these things. That is why he has gone beyond this Jagrat Swapnam Sushupti is for the conditioned soul. It's the conditioned soul who experiences all these things. So you will see there that when you see this death coming, when you see the death coming, only at that time, that only when you see that somebody else is experiencing death, only at that point you are thinking about death, isn't it? Otherwise you don't even think about death. Normally we don't think about death, but only when we see somebody is leaving the body, at that time we start thinking, oh, there is a thing called death, isn't it? We come to a little bit more conscious awareness of it. So, this awareness, what we experience it in this way, is only pointing out one factor, that from our own daily experiences, that in deep sleep, I did not experience this huge body, gross body. But the fact that I can come back to this gross body shows that I do exist, isn't it? There is an existence where there is no death. That experience I will have one day. It is an indication to that point. What is now happening is these two states, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, is a transitory activity which is happening to the soul. But me, from the deep sleep, I am able to understand that such a state of existence is possible without this gross body. It is possible to exist. Otherwise, how could I come back into this? I was still existing. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come back to this gross body again. And similarly, without being present in the Jagrat and Swapnam,
In Sushupti state, I was still existing, although I was not conscious of that. So, if you look into Bhagavadam, in the first canto, there is a verse about that. And the verse is spoken like this. It is in the first 19th chapter, verse 25. There, Parikshit Maharaj is preparing to receive the Sukadeva Goswami. And there he says, Sukadeva Goswami's arrival is spoken. And then if you read that verse, 1925, you will see how that verse indicates these things very nicely. It says, 25th verse, Sukadeva Goswami's arrival on the scene. Tatra bhaval bhagavan vyasa putro yadarchaya gam adamano anabekshaha alakshalingo nijalabatushto rudascha bhalai avaduda veshaha. Tatra bhaval bhagavan vyasa putro. They are all waiting in Ganga River, bank of the Ganga River. All the great sages were present there. Who else was present there? Parikshit Maharaj was also present there. At that time, Sukadeva Goswami is walking in. Sukadeva Goswami is walking in. While he was walking in, it says, Tatra Bhaval Bhagavan Vyasaputra, Vyasa Maharshi's son, Vyasaputra, is Sukadeva Goswami. Yadarchaya Gam Adamano Anabekshaham. Yadarchaya. This word Yadarchaya. Yadarchaya means accidentally he had come. By chance he has arrived there. Some commentators also say the word yadarchaya means by Krishna's desire. By whose ichcha? Somebody's ichcha. Somebody's desire, which was Krishna's desire. Gamadamano anabekshaha. How was he arriving? Anabekshaha. He had nothing. A person who is totally free from any desire. That was the first thing referring to Sukadeva Goswami. You see, when Sukadeva Goswami was coming, we will only see the gross side of Sukadeva Goswami. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, Sukadeva Goswami had no clothes. He was totally naked when he was coming. Isn't it? And all these personalities like Sukadeva Goswami, Vrishabhadeva and all that, they walked naked on this earth. Why? Because they have already out of the body. But in the body, their presence is even not known to them. That's why when they were coming, it says here, Alakshalingo Nijalabhatushto. Alakshalingo. He has no particularly any plan what he was going to do. Alakshalingo. He's not like us. When we are planning to travel somewhere, we make sure our ticket is ready, our passport is ready, our visa is ready, our cash is in the hands. Everything we organize and we think we did a great job, isn't it? But look at Sukadeva Goswami's traveling. He doesn't need any of these things. And these nine yogis we talk about in the Srimad Bhagavatam also travel like the way Sukadeva Goswami arrived on the scene. Just from somewhere in the sky, Sukadeva Goswami appeared. Sukadeva Goswami appeared. That is how they travel. And they can only travel in that way only if they have come perfected their siddhis in that way. That means, Alakshalingo Nijalabhadushto Vridascha Bhalai Avadhuta Veshaha. Avadhuta Vesha. Avadhuta means he is not dressed at all, and just like a young boy, 16 years old, 17 years old, that age group, he is walking in, accompanied by whom? A group of women and children with him. And people may wonder, were they attracted by this young man by any reason? Is that the reason why they accompanied him like that? Actually, it is not so. Who accompanied him? All the different yoga siddhis in their personal form, they were following him. Such a master yogi was this Sukadeva Goswami. That is the control of the great yogis. They have mastered the yoga system to such a perfection that all these personified yogic processes were traveling with him everywhere he went. And they took this form of these women and children and they went along with him. And he was least interested what was going on. Walked in, spoke to Parikshit, continued Srimad Bhagavatam from then on. That is why in the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, when they presented Sukadeva Goswami, the presentation is based on this understanding. Yadarchaya alakshalingo nijala avadushtom brudascha bhalai avadudaveshaham. And then Sudeva Goswami did not start an introduction. What did he say straight away? Yasyanubhavam akhila shruti saramegam adhyalmadibam adititirshadam tamondham. Look at Sudeva Goswami's words. How Sudha is saying about Sudeva's presentations of Bhagavatam. He didn't come and ask every sage and parishad, oh, how are you doing? What's happening? Are you okay? No, no such talk. This is the beauty of these great personalities. They won't talk anything which is not necessary. Knowing very well, he says that, he says here that, yasvanubhavam akhila shrutisaramegam, akhila shrutisaramegam, the essence of all the Vedic literature, who has experienced it himself. He has already experienced it. We have not experienced it. We are still studying the theory, isn't it? What have we experienced in the Vedic literature? We are so absorbed in the body and the bodily identity. Whereas Sukadeva Goswami is saying here, Sudha Goswami is saying about Sukadeva Goswami, that yasvanubhavam akhila shrutisaramegam, whatever Shruti and the Vedas and the Vedic literature has got to tell us, he has already got it, experienced in his own life. He doesn't need any more Vedic literature. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, he doesn't require any more, because already he has experienced everything what one has to experience from the literature. Whereas for us, we have to not even understood what the literature is saying. What's the question of experiencing it? So, see the gap, or see the difference between us and Sudeva Goswami's position. Sudeva Goswami, yasvanubhavam akhila shruti saram ekam. Shruti saram means the essence of all the shruti, Vedic literature. Yes, swanubhavam, what he has made, he has swanubhavam, he has brought it into his own realm of experience. In other words, he is that, he has become that. What shruti is talking about, a realized soul, he has become that. For him, there is no more coming back to our state of existence. That's why it said, yes, swanubhavam akhila shruti saram ekam. Adhyalma deepam adhititirshadam tamondham. This spiritual life is not an easy affair. It's warning there itself. Adhyalma deepam. Srimad Bhagavatam's another name is Adhyalma deepam. Adhyalma deepam means the light of spiritual knowledge. Adhyalma deepam. Spirituality. The light of spirituality. Adhyalma deepam. Adhititirshadam tamondham. Very, very hard to get to that light. Very, very hard. Adhititirshadam tamondham. Because it's full of ignorances on the path which is distracting us, blocking us in our progress in the spiritual life. That is why it is spoken like that. Adhititirshadam tamondham. Samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam tam vyasasunam upayami guram muninam. But then why did he come? He came to tell us samsarinam karunayaha. Because he has got so much compassion for us. To open our eyes to Krishna. Samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam tam vyasasoinam. This most confidential Puranam, Srimad Bhagavatam, was spoken by him out of his causeless mercy and compassion for conditioned souls rotting in ignorance. Do not know what is going on. And completely every morning getting up, doing this, doing that, and whole life spent in that way and not getting anywhere. Because these great personalities, nine yogis, Kavihari Andarikshanda, they all, these personalities like Sudeva Goswami, they have all come because they have gone out of this. They have escaped from this. And so they, out of their mercy towards us, they come and they explain to us and they tell us about that. Why? Because, why do they feel so much compassion for us? Because they know what we are going through here. What we are going through here. No knowledge. Completely in ignorance, taking everything based on the mind and the senses, isn't it? You see how difficult it is in spiritual life. Sometimes we went to school and college and we studied something and we learned everything has to be like this. According to our formulas and theories, only then the world should run based on that. This is what we have ultimately come to the conclusion. So what do? We take all the Puranas and take to Oxford and start going through Puranas and check it out if it is all falling in line with our understanding. If you do research on Puranam, you are lost. You won't get anywhere with Puranas. You won't get anywhere if you start doing research with Puranas. This all has been done long ago. But we are, the modern man in the society is thinking, if we get everything to Oxford or Cambridge and we start researching them, we'll get it properly. This is not the process. Unfortunately, it is not the process. Puranas were written. Why Puranas were written? Eventually, ultimately we have to know that also. Puranas were written in order that out of there, in the Bhagavatam if you read, you will see, Sri Shudra Adibira Pyuda, that knowing very well, the out of compassion, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimad Bhagavatam for those people in the age of Kali who cannot capture what is spiritual life, who cannot know what is the goal of spiritual life, who have no idea what is spiritual life. We are thinking that accumulating wealth, enjoying material life, and satisfying the senses, and in the name of bhakti doing something, this is all spiritual life. But no, Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the essence of all the Vedic literature. Wherever Vedic knowledge is, particularly in the Upanishads, which is of a very higher degree, ordinary people will find it very, very difficult to understand it, or to speak about following it. So therefore, out of his causeless mercy and compassion for us, Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So you will notice in the 5th chapter, while discussing on the Srimad Bhagavatam's glories, it is mentioned there, Sri Shudra Adibira Pyuda, that all the age, in the age of Kali, all men are Shudras. And on the women, all both of them requires some compassionate way of presenting the truth to them so that they can be taken out of their ignorance. Out of their ignorance. Because we are in ignorance. We know that. Because of the way we think and act is pure indication of our ignorance. That is the reason why we find difficult to accept Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes. Because of this, we think that Bhagavatam is not, after our research work, some great professor or scholar has written a commentary. And that there he is saying that these things, defects are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He finds defects in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or he points out that these things do not agree with our modern scientific process. So therefore he rejects Bhagavatam. Who is the loser? Is Bhagavatam the loser? Or the person who has done the research is the loser? Bhagavatam is definitely not the loser. Because you have gone to Srimad Bhagavatam with your this kind of mind. And if you go in that route, you won't get anywhere with Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting us something much more important than that. In order to get us to understand that point, Bhagavatam has been presented so that to keep our mind absorbed in the Bhagavatam and at the same time able to make us think further than that. Where is it going at the end? What is that Vedavyas is trying to tell us through these things? Because this is important. Like Srimad Bhagavatam, if you take, here Sudeva Goswami is presented as a brahmachari, isn't it? As a brahmachari. In many other Puranas, the Devi Bhagavatam and all that, Sudeva Goswami has a different householder life mentioned there. So there will be always certain differences from one Puranam to another. In Puranams you will notice this. That is the nature of Puranams are written. The idea behind it is to change this thinking from us. The sages are very, very clever. They know our mentality, what it is like. We will only accept if it is like this. This is our mind. So knowing very well, they decided that let them not think that everything is like this. So they made things like that. They wrote these books in that way. Deliberately, they have made changes. For example, Bhishma's departure from this world. In the Bhagavatam and Mahabharatam, there is little differences. Both were written by Vedavyas. Why this difference had come? Why was this difference in Mahabharatam and Bhagavatam? Why is the difference between Devi Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavatam about Sudeva Goswami's life? Deliberately, and the same person has written. Do you think Vedavyas was having something else in his head when he wrote Devi Bhagavatam, when he wrote Mahabharatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, something else? No, that was not the reason. The reason was this, that knowing very well the human nature and human psychology, always trying to bring everything into one box and square, and to think that this is the only way Krishna's creation can work. And this is where spirituality and materialism is changing. In materialistic concept, all this will fall in squares and blocks. In spiritual concept, it won't. This is the difficulty. All these things have to be very clear, because when we study Srimad Bhagavatam and when we are able to appreciate Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, you will notice that many of these things are very abstract. It is not even in our capacity to know it. That is why this knowledge is so superior. And if the scientists and all is asking for proof, we have no answer for that. We are not interested also in answering them. It is based on this observation that the mind which is unidirectional, which works in the unidirectional way,
and which is also requiring her proof to satisfy the mind, thinking that the creation is working under our direction. But what Bhagavatam is saying is this, that all these differences can happen. In the different things what is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find a lot of things which you may have doubts. It was done deliberately by the great sages so that our mind don't think like this. Let it keep that openness. Let it have that steadiness in the mind, that it is able to absorb the Shastam or the principle of spiritual life from the Puranas. That's the reason why it's been spoken like that. So, if you come back to Srimad Bhagavatam, then the Srimad Bhagavatam is the tree. It's considered to be like a tree. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't begin in the first canto, as you know. So Sudeva Goswami comes at the very end of the first canto. So strictly speaking, Srimad Bhagavatam is started speaking from the second canto. The seed was sown in the second canto. In the third canto, what happened? Third canto, the trunk of the tree started building up. The trunk was come up. In the fourth canto, the branches started coming out. In the fifth canto, the twigs and everything start coming. The whole tree is growing now. And similarly, you will notice the tree, the branches, the twigs, the leaves, and then the flowers gradually went on like that. And by the time it came to tenth canto, it's a full tree, full grown with the fruits. Full grown with the fruits, the tree is standing there. So, up to the tenth canto, the tenth canto represents that tree which is fully grown and fully to be seen. Like we say, the smiling face of Krishna. That is that tree, Srimad Bhagavatam tree is standing there. But then, what is in the Ekadasha Skandham? Ekadasha Skandham is that tree where all the fruits are now ripe and you can start eating them. You are eating those ripened fruits, what you have seen in the 10th canto. When you start eating them, that is the 11th canto. So now you can, this is a description to show the way gradually how Bhagavatam matures into the final stage of release from the material world once for all. That is why mukti. Mukti is discussed in the 11th canto, liberation. Surubana sandhanam hi mukti hi tanyadha rubam surubana vyavastati. Getting to surubam, our own real identity, that is the goal. Goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is also that. It's not anything else, Muktihi tanyadha rubam swarubena vyavastati. How to come to our swarubam, how to find our real identity, what we are. That is what we are searching in this world, but only thing, we don't know what we are searching. We are searching without knowing what we are and what we are looking for, we are searching. But Bhagavatam is explicitly telling us that muktihi tanyadha rubam swarubena vyavastati. And when you come to Swarupam, your own true identity, what you are, you have realized the self, then you know that there is only one thing, that is the truth. That truth is Krishna. Everything else is false. That realization will come. Because now we see Krishna separate, everything else separate from Krishna. Isn't it? We see so many things. This is separate, that separate, everything is separate. But ultimately, out of the three aspects of Sachidanandam, as you know, that the true Vastu, Vastu Shivadam, it said, isn't it, in the second chapter, verses, Vedyam, Vastavamatra, Vastu Shivadam. Vastavam, it is Vastavam. Vastavam means the real thing. Real thing is the Vastavam, Vastu. Vastu means the substance. Real Vastu or real substance is Vedyam, Vastavamatra, Vastu Shivadam. That Shivadam, and it is, if you know that, then everything, all the other entities, unknown entity, or the other entities what we knew, we realize that it is not truth, it's all false. So that realization comes when we come to that point. Vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. If you look into Parikshit Maharaj, at the time, finally, when Sudeva Goswami was leaving this world, leaving this world means leaving Parikshit. He walked away from there. Like the way he appeared, he disappeared also in the same way. At that point, Parikshit answers, what am I now? He has realized. How did he say that? Siddhosmi anugrahidosmi. Putting his hand on his head, he says, Siddhosmi anugrahidosmi. I have understood. Now what I have to understand? What did I understood? That there is no death. There is no such thing called death. It doesn't exist. He has realized that after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days from Sudeva Goswami. So this process of Krishna consciousness is hearing, process is hearing. And all other things, even chanting the holy name, doing deity worship, taking prasadam, circumambulating the deity, everything what we are doing is only to make us to mature ourselves to hear Bhagavatam. That is the goal of all these things, nothing else. So that this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Krishna himself, what does Krishna say? At the time of departing from this world, Uddhava asked Krishna, what did Krishna say to Uddhava? Uddhava says, there it says, Srimal Bhagavad Akhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. Pratyaksha Krishna. Krishna is present in this world in the form of Srimal Bhagavadam. Uddhava asked Krishna, why don't you stay some more time? Krishna said, no, I have to leave. The answer was, Tirodhaya Pravishtoham. I have to disappear from here. You don't have to worry about it. Why? Srimal Bhagavad Arnavam. I am entering to Srimal Bhagavadam. So, everything else, chanting holy name, taking the prasadam, worshipping the deity, meditating Krishna's form, all these things is ultimately to make us mature, to make us a maturity in us to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Such is the power of this hearing process. This is what I was going to stress at this point. Before that, conclusion, that this personalities who have gone ahead in the spiritual path, they are different. They are not like us. They don't follow the rules of this world, what we have put on. There was one great personality in Tamil Nadu, in Chennai. His name was Ramalinga Swami. This personality, he was so advanced in spiritually that there was a temple where he used to go regularly. So there was one Siddha. Siddha means one who has perfected himself. He has got Siddhis. Siddhis. Siddhis means mystic powers. Mystic powers means that by seeing a person, he would say who he is. He will say who he is. That kind of Siddhi he had. In what terminology he used to say was like this. People used to think he was a crazy person. He used to sit outside the temple. When he used to sit outside the temple, people used to come to the temple with different articles of worship, and they used to come to the temple worship and then they go back. So every time somebody was coming, he will say like this. So the dog is coming, he will say. A man is coming, he'll turn out to you and say, it's a dog who is coming, he'll say. And then someone else is coming, it's a cat is coming, he says. And somebody else coming, he says, it's a tiger comes. Or an elephant. Like there's different animals. He was pointing out everyone. So people used to think he is a crazy man. Used to say, he's a crazy man. They used to ignore him. After all, he never used to harm anybody. But he will say like this. But ultimately, when Ramalinga Swamiji came to the temple, he points at him and says, here is a human being coming, he says. Why? Because he was able to see that majority of the people who were coming to the temple, they were all coming with their material desires. And to fulfill those material desires, they were coming to the temple. Nobody was coming there with the way the Ramalinga Swamiji was coming. Ramalinga Swamiji was coming, he was only a young boy, 12 or 13 years old. And he was only just wearing a loincloth, and he had his thread and the shikha and the tilak all over his body. And when he was coming, he says, here is a human being coming. Up to that point, for everyone else who was coming to the temple for him, it was either a cat or a dog or another animal. Why? Because he was seeing that in every one of them, he was seeing that animal side was much more predominant than the human side. Or he has not progressed enough in the process of spirituality. So such people can see that and they can say that. But what do we take at that time? Oh, he is a crazy man who is sitting there talking all this. So that's the way it is. In spiritual life, everything, these 9 yogis, similarly, Jadabharata, if you remember the story in the Bhagavadam, Bharata Maharaj story, Bharata Yogeshwara, and then similarly, Sukadeva Goswami, and all these personalities, they are not belonging to our category. They are from a different species altogether. We have to understand that, and we have to know their language.
And we have to know their language. And we have to know their instructions. That is the way to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll discuss next Sunday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, sorry. Next Sunday is Rath Yatra. So we won't have the class next Sunday. We'll have the week after next.